Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 10th. Houston ISD visits third future schools in Midland. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Third Future Schools has changed the fortunes of multiple schools in Midland, Odessa, and the charter operator is now helping his former boss, Mike Miles, who has taken over at Houston ISD. Third Future Schools welcomed dozens of Houston ISD personnel to Midland, Odessa this week to see how academic change is happening in the region. The roster of Third Future Schools in Midland, Odessa includes Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy and Lamar Elementary in Midland. This will be the first year for Lamar under the Third Future umbrella, as Midland ISD turned the school over to its in-district partner because of failing marks and student outcome challenges. Third Future Schools led Houston College Prep to a 36-point improvement in academic performance and a grade 1 point away from an A after just 2 years. Quote, "They sent some administrators to see the instructional model in action," said Zach Craddock, chief of schools at Third Future Schools. Miles is the former CEO at Third Future. He was appointed by the Texas Education Agency to oversee the largest district in the state, 189,000 students and 274 campuses. Since arriving in Houston, his moves have included an announcement to cut more than 2,300 positions as part of a central office reorganization. Quote, "I think they are learning our personalized learning model and to reimagine education and a new education system," Craddock said. "This is not the status quo. We operate differently," end quote. Craddock said the arrival of Houston ISD leaders in Midland, Odessa is nothing new. Third Future Schools, he said, has welcomed dozens of school districts from around the state to help reimagine education and to learn the Third Future model. Quote, "If Miles wants to replicate the Third Future system there, fine," Craddock said. "It is what we do and what we have done. We have been fortunate since 2017 to get decent results and make a difference in the lives of a lot of students," end quote. Craddock took the opportunity to say that the school year is already going well at Lamar, Third Future's newest Midland campus. He also credited staffs at local schools for their efforts while being put under the microscope. Junior Achievement helps students connect classroom lessons with real-world knowledge. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Junior Achievement Permian Basin equips students with the real-world knowledge and experience necessary to succeed in a global economy. Junior Achievement focuses on teaching curriculum to local students that historically hasn't been taught in schools, like financial literacy, workforce readiness, and entrepreneurship. Helping students connect what they learn in school with life outside the classroom allows Junior Achievement to show K-12 students how to invest in their future, gain a better understanding of the world around them, and pursue personal goals. Quote, "More and more now, schools are starting to touch on those things," Executive Director Melinda Henderson said. "But we have a K-12 curriculum that has already been created and coordinates with the state standards that teachers already have to teach that gives them curriculum they can use," end quote. In addition to providing lesson plans and curriculum for teachers, Junior Achievement's special sauce are its volunteers, according to Henderson. Junior Achievement has local volunteers go into classrooms to teach financial literacy, the ins and outs of personal finance, and share their story to inspire local students. Quote, "They teach our students our curriculum, but they're able to talk about who they are, what they do for a living, how they got there. So it inspires students to learn about what the job market is, what people do," Henderson said. "Maybe hear about things they've never thought of, learn about money and how to handle money," end quote. Henderson says the organization is passionate about changing lives, keeping young students in school, and helping students understand what it takes to accomplish their goals. The executive director said the organization encourages young students to remain on their respective educational paths through exposing the vitality of education as it relates to prosperity, financial, and otherwise, following graduation. Teaching high school students about personal finance and the job market makes sense as they enter college, but Junior Achievement is active in local elementary schools teaching the basics. Quote, "With kindergartners, we teach the difference between a want and a need," Henderson said. "Is it more important that you have food to eat or that you have a really sparkly pair of tennis shoes? We'll start talking a little bit about money and what money looks like. There's math involved," end quote. Henderson recalled a local high school student who planned on being the first member of his family to graduate high school and attend college. He wanted to be a surgeon. However, he didn't feel like he had the finances available to pay for a four-year university, and it became more and more apparent that he would have to attend Odessa College due to financial reasons. That is, until personnel from First Basin Credit Union visited his classroom as a part of Junior Achievement's volunteer program. He learned about budgeting. He learned about saving. He learned how to look at what was going to be needed to become a surgeon, and he assessed that and decided that he really wanted to go for the goal of going to Texas Tech instead of going to OC, Henderson said. He started working on a budget. He started looking at his opportunities. Where can I raise a little money? And he ended up going to Texas Tech, end quote. Henderson said the organization is always looking for volunteers to participate in its program. Volunteer at Junior Achievement of the Permian Basin, ja.org. Small Bites. Two area barbecue joints make Texas Monthly list. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. There's no denying good food can be found throughout the Permian Basin, and the recent list of best barbecue joints in Texas from Texas Monthly proves just that. Both the Half Acre and Brantley Creek Barbecue made the list, giving both establishments the recognition they deserve for providing consistent, praiseworthy food for the Midland-Odessa community. Both businesses were recognized in the magazine last year as well. Quote, "I knew Daniel Vaughn, the notorious barbecue writer for Texas Monthly, visited our restaurant a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't necessarily know we were going to be in the list," John Scarber, owner of Half Acre and Midland Meat Company, told the reporter Telegram. Quote, "We know how important those lists are and that people take them to heart, so we're very blessed," end quote. The Half Acre is no stranger to accolades, with cook-off king Aaron Leslie as pitmaster and a strong business of meat from mothership Midland Meat Company. The business has won barbecue competitions all over the country since opening in 2019. Quote, "In the last 4 or 5 years, the barbecue scene in Midland has really taken off. I'm just glad that whether it's us, Brantley Creek, or whoever, that Midland's being recognized for barbecue because we never have been," Scarber explained. "It's neat to know that people are going to be traveling out this way to make these stops, and we're going to be happy to serve them. There's lots of good food around here. Shop local and support small business." End quote. As for Brandon McPherson, owner, operator, and pitmaster for Brantley Creek Barbecue, the long, sweaty hours spent in his food truck smoking meat and perfecting his sauce recipes have paid off. After opening his brick and mortar earlier this year, being named to the list just felt like the cherry on top. Quote, "It's a milestone for sure. Anybody in the barbecue world dreams to be on any kind of Texas Monthly list, and to land as one of the top barbecue joints is pretty awesome," McPherson said. A competitive barbecue cook himself, McPherson knows what it takes to achieve great feats in the food industry. Since he started Brantley Creek Barbecue in 2017, McPherson said he's seen the 432 meat scene progress for the better, and the recognition for the Midland-Odessa area has been a long time coming. In September, McPherson was featured on an episode of The Texas Bucket List. The half acre is located at 1101 Washita and is open 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Brantley Creek Barbecue can be found at 3541 Faudry Road with operating hours 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Also recognized on the list was Rossler's Blue Cord Barbecue in Harker Heights between Temple and Austin. Owner Stephen Rossler is a former Greenwood resident.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 10th, 2023. Happenings. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the Blue Door, Pottery Workshop with Leslie Clay, Saturday. Live Music with Dave Martinez, August 16th. Live Music with Jojo DiSalvo, August 18th. Mahjong 101-102, August 13th. Legally Blonde Trivia, August 24th. At the Bush Convention Center, Tall City Comic Con, Friday through Sunday. At Centennial Park, Movies in the Park, Hotel Transylvania 4, Friday. At the Cookie Encounter, Beginner Cookie Decorating Class, August 17th. At the Destination, Karaoke Night, Thursday. Friday Night Live, Jerry Hart and Flatland, Friday. La Dez, Saturday. Open Mic Night, August 17th. Friday Night Live, To Be Determined, August 18th. The Chad Cook Band, August 19th. At Earth, Body, and Soul, walk-in tarot reading every Tuesday. Walk-in Reiki energy clearing every Wednesday. Chakra balancing, August 18th. Vendor Saturday, August 19th. Automatic writing with your guides, August 24th. At Eccentric Brewing Company, Pause and Paint Yappy Hour Plus Adoption Event, Saturday. At the Horseshoe, Midland County Fair, August 24th through 27th. at the Museum of the Southwest, downtown Market Farmers Market in Midland every Saturday. Sci Friday, MST3K the movie, August 25th. At Parks Legato, Farmers Market, Saturday. At the Tailgate, Pat Green, August 18th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia, every Tuesday. Tall City Beer Run, every Thursday. Tall City Brewing Company Invitational, Saturday. At the Venue at Live Oak, Tejas Brothers, August 24th. The State Line Band and Chris DeAndra, August 31st. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Alice Cooper, August 19th. John Waite with John Ford Coley, August 24th. Kat Timpf, August 26th. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, August 11th through 13th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Grow your comic pile. Permian Basin Comic Con is expanding the roster with the group's first-ever Collect It Expo being held this weekend at the Busch Convention Center. Similar to a typical Comic Con, this expo will feature all of the usual festivities, booths of vendors and creators, performances, panels, and more, except with a unique twist. Collectible items will be the main focus. Guests can expect local comic book artists, celebrity guests, gaming tournaments, cosplay contests, and much more. Tickets can be bought at conliveevents.com/e/collectitmidland/tickets. 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at 105 North Main. Potty with your pup. Head over to Eccentric Brewing Company for a yappy event filled with dog paintings. Literally, your dog can paint a picture. And animal adoptions. There will also be food trucks, craft beer, PBAA merchandise, photo ops from Tasha Sport Photography, and much more. Entry is free. Portrait paintings cost $15. Noon to 4 p.m. Saturday at 1402 Cotton Flat Road. Enjoy a free movie. Want to give the family one more taste of summer? Head to Centennial Park for a free showing of Hotel Transylvania 4. Bring a lawn chair or picnic blanket to sit on. Food trucks will be on site. The movie starts at dusk. Food starts at 6 p.m. Friday at 200 West Wall. Barbenheimer and Other Movies Revive Synergy Theater Business, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Once upon a time, in a faraway land, streaming services didn't exist, and cinemas reigned. A sense of nostalgia, the smell of buttered popcorn, kept people in theaters, even with the creation of Blockbuster, Redbox, and other video rental chains. When platforms such as Netflix and Hulu advanced, cinema attendance numbers only slightly decreased, as movie premieres still happened in the physical locations. Yet, once the COVID-19 pandemic struck, the business model for both streaming platforms and cinemas changed forever. In the spring and early summer of 2020, we were closed. We were scrambling to take care of the folks who worked at Synergy. Rich Schwartz, Synergy's president and CFO, told the Reporter Telegram. Fairly quickly here in Texas, we were able to get back open on a very modest basis. It was really a slow build for the remaining portion of that year and into 2021, and it really came down to two big things. One, people were uncertain about their health. The other impact folks don't think about so directly is the productions of movies came to a halt. Schwartz said, "The filming freeze led to one of the most lasting pandemic effects, only one big movie release per week versus the 3 to 4 seen in previous years." However, Synergy and the rest of the cinema industry continue to see business-saving trends in 2023. So far, 2023 has reported 40% more live releases than 2022, which will ultimately bring the grand total to 107. 2022 only showcased 71, according to Schwartz. In 2019, the number was 112. With July being the second busiest month the cinema industry has ever seen, Schwartz said the releases of Barbie, Oppenheimer, and even Sound of Freedom reminded people of the special bond found between a movie premiere and the showing theater. "I love to stream movies in my house, but there's nothing like watching a movie at a cinema in that shared communal experience. There's nothing that can replace that," Schwartz said. Of course, the results from Barbenheimer remain incomparable to other premieres this year. The National Association of Theater Owners estimated that 200,000 people saw both movies on the same day at the same cinema, he explained. As for Barbenheimer effect on Synergy, box office revenues for the third weekend in July 2023, when the films were released, were 126% higher than in 2022. Overall, Schwartz said he sees the peaks from before the pandemic coming back to theaters across the nation, not only Synergy. Although industry setbacks, such as the actor and writer strikes, will cause some delays in production, the undeniable sentimentality of a movie theater experience paired with the yearning for normal human experiences seen this summer will carry the business for years to come. Synergy is located at 1917 Liberty Drive. Operating hours run from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. On the net, synergy.com.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 10th. Kaysen Cade Beck passed away on August 4th in Dallas, Texas. He was born November 2nd, 2022 in Odessa, Texas, to Clint and Tammy Beck. He was preceded in death by his fraternal grandfather, Johnny Beck, maternal grandparents, Charles and Shirley Snodgrass, maternal great-grandparents, Dave and Dora Snodgrass. He is survived by his parents, Clint and Tammy Beck, one sister, Heavenly Beck, fraternal grandparents, Patty and T.J. Siegler, Cheney and Richard Wilson, maternal grandparents, Donna and David Lewis, aunts Jonna Swopes, Gina Witten, and husband Zeno, Becky McClure, grandfather Charles Snodgrass, and grandmother Shannon Gigi Christie Elliott, auntie Granny Nisa Bridges, three special cousins Charlie and Lizzie Snodgrass, Mario Sherwood, and numerous others. In lieu of flowers, please send a donation in Kaysen's name to the Ronald McDonald House of Dallas, Texas. Kaysen Celebration of Life will be on August 12th at 2 p.m. at the Ranchland Hills Golf Club, 1600 East Wadley Street in Midland. Jerry Don Barrow, age 64, of Midland, passed away August 4th. Cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are under the care and direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com.
Hi, I'm continuing the Odessa American for August 9th, 2023. First Day Brings Large Influx of Students by Ruth Campbell. Crowds of students converged on campuses in Ector County ISD Wednesday for the first day of the new school year. Superintendent Scott Murray visited Bonham Middle School, Odessa High School, the YMCA pre-kindergarten program, and the Buddy West Elementary School. As of midday Wednesday, Murray said it had been a good first day of school so far. "I think the biggest thing we've seen today is larger numbers. We heard that here at West. I was at Bonham Middle School and they have sixth grade only," and Murray said the principal told him that there were 40 more students than they were projected to have just in that grade. "That's what we're seeing today, is just larger numbers. That's not every school. We could have some with smaller numbers, but that's just an unofficial observation," Murray said. He added that ECISD projected 33,500 students for the year. "We could be there right now, maybe a little above it. We've seen some larger numbers already, but we wait several weeks before we get final numbers. Over the next, believe it or not, month, people will trickle into school. Our numbers every day will continue to grow. And, of course, Monday, being the next first day of school, we'll see another group of kids coming in," Murray said. Schools on Wednesday welcome pre-kindergarten through 6th grade and 9th graders. On August 14th, 7th and 8th graders and sophomores through seniors return. "Today is about relationship building, routine, and expectation establishment. We know in education that one of the primary factors that affects a student's learning is the relationship they have with their teachers. At the elementary level, middle school, and high school today, a lot of emphasis is on building those relationships between teachers and students, and then establishing routines. What are the expectations that we have in school? Everything from walking in a line to being in a classroom environment. What does learning look like? How do we behave in order to make sure that we learn?" Murray said. This will be West Principal Nora Gonzalez's third year as a campus chief and her third at Buddy West. She will be starting her 16th year with ECISD. She was a teacher and assistant principal previously. Gonzalez was expecting 714 students, but as of Wednesday, there were 741 present in class. The campus has kindergarten through 5th grade students. "We enrolled 20 new students who will start tomorrow, so that brings me up to 761, Gonzalez said. Asked how she was feeling about the first day, she said, "We survived. I know it's not over, it's 12 o'clock, but if we survived arrival, it's going to be a good day. I'm feeling excited. I was anxious to start the new school year and just get the year going," Gonzalez said. For her, preparation takes all summer. She had summer school at Buddy West and attended many professional development opportunities. She's looking forward to a positive, successful year and said she has no teacher vacancies. Leslie Ronquillo is a first-year's teacher. She went through the OC2 UTPB Teaching in 3 program, where students attended Odessa College for a year and a half and University of Texas Permian Basin for a year and a half. After successful completion, students earn an Associate of Arts in Teaching degree from OC, followed by a Bachelor of Arts in Multidisciplinary Students, Early Childhood through 6th grade, from UTPB. She graduated in May and said she would recommend the program to anyone who knows they want to pursue education. Ronquillo was also a UTPB teacher resident at Goliad Elementary School in 5th grade math. That's the subject she is now teaching at West. "So far, I have enjoyed being able to teach the students and see their growth," said Ronquillo, who is from Fort Stockton. With one of her classes, she talked about classroom expectations and procedures. Ronquillo told the students her favorite color is red, her favorite foods, desserts, and places to shop. She added she loves spending time with her family. Santiago Grijalva, a 10-year-old 5th grader at West Elementary, was happy to be back at the school he has attended since kindergarten. His favorite subjects are math or science. "It's been fun. It's been really fun switching and learning everything. Science, math, reading. This school is awesome. I can't imagine what I would do if I didn't go to this school," Grijalva said. Murray reminded families and community members that school has started, so there are buses on the road and there will be more traffic. "There will be a lot of children walking around neighborhoods in the morning and afternoons and around school zones. Just reminding all of us that drive to be extra vigilant as we travel through a school zone and as we're driving around neighborhoods. Just be on the lookout for kids that are learning new ways of walking around streets and areas. Just being mindful that safety is important right now, Murray said. Hi, I'm continuing the Odessa American for August 9th, 2023. Tax-free weekend is August 11th through 13th. Music City Mall Odessa is reminding customers about this weekend's state sales tax holiday, which can apply to many back-to-school essentials. Tax-free weekend is August 11th through midnight August 13th, according to the Texas Comptroller. Many items available at over 100 merchants inside Music City Mall will be eligible for this sales tax incentive. Items like clothing, shoes, backpacks, and other back-to-school essentials can qualify. We have additional resources available and look forward to seeing customers take advantage of this weekend's sales tax holiday. Hi, I'm continuing the Odessa American for August 9th, 2023. College football. UTPB begins fall practice under new head coach McCullough by Michael Bauer. With plenty of new faces mixed in with some of the familiar ones, the UTPB football team held its first fall practice for the 2023 season Wednesday morning at Falcon Field. The new faces include not only the incoming transfers, but also head coach Chris McCullough, who is entering his first season with the Falcons. McCullough comes in after serving as the head coach at East Central University last year. He replaces Justin Kerrigan, who became the school's deputy athletic director. It was the team's first time on the field since the spring workouts earlier this year. With spring ball, obviously, you have these emotions of, man, I'm excited to be back out there. But now that it's the start of the season, it's a whole new level, McCullough said. It's a new level of excitement, but a whole another level of work because we know the challenges ahead of us. We know the expectations we set for ourselves. We have to go out and win every single ball game, but it takes a lot of heart and hard work and a lot of preparation going forward. While McCullough has been preaching team culture with the Falcons, he also emphasized turnovers and ball security as some of the things he wants to see from his offense and defense. He pointed to East Central Oklahoma's stats last year as the team led the rankings in a turnover margin. If we can have great ball security and take care of the football and not turn the ball over, and the defense creates turnovers, we'll be fine, McCullough said. At my previous institution, we were number one in the country in turnover margin at all levels. I'm trying to replicate that again this year. If our defense can get takeaways and give our offense the ball again and give our quarterback Kenny Hernseer the ball, then I can promise you a lot of points. Hernseer is one of the 30 players who transferred to UTPB during the offseason, and 8 of which followed McCullough from East Central Oklahoma to Odessa. The biggest key is making sure you have buy-in from your players, McCullough said. Our players have fully bought in. They've put in all the extra work that they need to get to the level that we need to be for the next practice. These guys are doing everything that you want a school and a university and a team to win. With it being the first week of practice, McCullough said one of the challenges is just getting the players back into the groove. Obviously, the intensity is there, McCullough said. We all love football. We love being out there. The intensity's here. It's how we practice because we have a bunch of new guys and we're teaching them how we do things and move to each station. Officially, it might be called the start of fall camp, but with the heated conditions outside being as high as 106 degrees, it's still very much summer. The biggest challenge is the heat, McCullough said. That's why we're going 9 to 11 a.m. Early, the conditions are good, but late in the practice, it gets hot and takes a toll on your mind, but that's how a game is. We're trying to get everything as game-like as possible. The Falcons will open their season against NAIA Texas College on September 2nd at Estown Broadband Stadium in Midland. McCullough is no stranger to Texas College's head coach Darrell Jackson. Texas College is an opponent that has a good head coach, McCullough said. Jackson's been in a lot of great places. He's a good friend of mine. They're going to come in with a lot of intensity. They're going to come out all fired up. We just have to control our emotions and take it one play at a time. UTPB will then face Western Colorado on the road September 9th before traveling to Southwest Baptist in Bolivar, Missouri, September 16th. The Falcons will begin Lone Star Conference play against West Texas A&M in Midland September 23rd. Hi, I am continuing the Odessa American for August 10th, 2023. Consortium aims to get more people into health and technology by Ruth Campbell. Aiming to get more people into health informatics and technology, University of Texas Health Houston has formed a consortium that includes University of Texas Permian Basin. Susan Fenton, Associate Professor and Associate Dean for Academic and Curricular Affairs at UT Health Houston D. Bradley McWilliams School of Biomedical Informatics, said the name of the project from the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology is Workforce Development for Public Health Informatics and Technology. In Texas, it's called Gaining Equity in Training for Public Health Informatics and Technology, or GetFIT. We have other universities that have joined us from across the state. Dr. Samuel Tarasis at the University of Texas Permian Basin is one of our consortium members that we're working with. There are 9 consortium members. In October, that will go to 10 because we're going to be adding another university, so our universities right now are Houston Tillotson University in Austin, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, UT Permian Basin, the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, Prairie View A&M, UT Arlington, UT El Paso, and Texas A&M International, Fenton said. The target is to train 1,900 participants. Of those, 1,400 undergraduate students are being targeted from schools like UTPB. Fenton said 500 participants are being sought as visiting professionals who will get additional training in public health informatics. Tarasis said the number of students from UTPB will be 50, and there are also students enrolled in the 2 boot camps. We've developed curriculum across 16 different topic areas. What we're doing is allowing each university to integrate that public health informatics and technology curriculum into programs at their university as is best for them. That's because we don't have a standardized undergraduate curriculum across the state of Texas, and even then it would be impossible for us to do that, Fenton said. The first boot camp was held at UTPB in 2022, and there were 60 students. The grant for the program runs until September 2025. The boot camps are 2-week, full-day, in-person boot camps, Fenton said. She added that they will have another boot camp at UTPB in summer 2024. The program is federally funded. The Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology is located in the Department of Health and Human Services. It's been a wonderful opportunity because at UTPB we don't have a full-on public health department, but we do have a relatively new College of Health Sciences and Human Performance. So having this curriculum has really had an impact on various departments and various programs, Tarasis said. We've been able to use various elements of the curriculum in our athletic training program, our exercise science program, and our nursing program. We have a College of Business, and they have some health management programs that they've been using that curriculum for. We've recently added to our team a professor from the Department of Psychology. She's a health psychologist. She started integrating the curriculum and that content in her courses, Tarasis said. Because the area is rural, Tarasa said, having students who are prepared with specialized training and information around informatics and analytics makes them much more marketable when they enter the healthcare field. It's really had a very positive impact and has helped us to develop our own program in our health sciences and human performance as well, he added. Fenton says students in informatics don't have any problems finding jobs. One of the parts of our consortium is that students who go through either the boot camp or the training through the curriculum delivery at their institutions then become available to participate in internships, Fenton said. These are typically about 3 months long. The students receive a stipend for it, but it gives them real-world training. We've had several students who've been hired with jobs through these internships, so it's really helping to grow that workforce, she added. Tarasa said it exposes students who may not have known about these workforce options. In our boot camp, we had students from nursing and from athletic training and computer science. We hope to have a wider range of disciplines in our next boot camp, but many of these students hadn't heard about it, and it really had an impact in terms of how they thought about their careers in healthcare. It was also a wonderful opportunity for them to work interdisciplinary and see how these disciplines benefited from one another and how they work together, he said. Fenton said the program is open to anyone who expresses an interest. We do ask them to give us a brief 250-word essay to say why they are interested, because we want to know that they are really interested, she said. Fenton said that there will be a GetFIT Summit September 14th, bringing together consortium members. Students have had opportunities to submit posters from the work they've done, and we're also inviting our host sites and employers to be there. We're very excited about that. Especially for the students, having them be able to interact between the different institutions is a big benefit, she added. Hi, I'm continuing the Odessa American for August 10th, 2023. Falcons Soaring to Success in Classroom by Brandon Moore, Athletics Communication Specialist. UT Permian Basin student athletes continue to excel in the classroom. The Lone Star Conference announced that 164 Falcons were named to the Commissioner's Honor Roll for the 2022-23 spring semester. 57 of those athletes made a perfect 4.0 GPA. We pride ourselves in celebrating the academic achievements of our student athletes, said Vice President for Athletics Todd Dooley. The 164 student athletes landing on the Commissioner's Honor Roll speaks directly to their pursuit of excellence in the classroom at UT Permian Basin. The Commissioner's Honor Roll is announced at the conclusion of the fall and spring semesters with student athletes qualifying based on grade point average for the specified semester. To be eligible for the recognition, student athletes must have a minimum 3.30 grade point average for the semester and be on the roster. Participants on all 19 LSC championship sports, 3 non-conference Division II sports, and athletic training student staff are included among the spring 2023 honorees.
Confusion and stress abound for 500,000 Texans bumped from Medicaid. For 7 years, Marcella Del Cid has guided Texans through the Medicaid application minefield, working past language barriers and documentation issues out of a community center in Houston. But her clients have never been more confused or frustrated than now, since the state began booting people from the program after years-long period of continuous coverage. During the pandemic, federal regulations prohibited states from removing people from Medicaid, allowing access to nonstop health insurance coverage for about 3 million Texans who would have regularly lost coverage beginning in March of 2020. But new federal funding legislation lifted these protections in April, and the state launched the process of removing people it thought would be ineligible. 500,000 Texans, mainly children, but also disabled adults and women who recently gave birth, have lost coverage since then, leaving them in limbo without access to medical treatment. Some had become ineligible over the pandemic, whether they were children who aged out of the program, mothers who were past the time of prenatal coverage, or those who have exceeded Texas's strict income limit. But many remained eligible and were kicked off as a result of procedural issues, such as not receiving messages from the state, responding to them late, or not including the correct documentation in their renewal application. As a result, community health centers are bracing for a flood of people who don't know their coverage has ended, and outreach centers that help navigate Medicaid are seeing their clients overwhelmed by the process. Many of Del Cid's clients are parents whose children were denied, approved, and denied Medicaid again within a 2-week period after relying on it throughout the pandemic. Some sent their application in the mail a day late and now have to restart the entire process. Others didn't have exact employer information for the past few years and were denied. It gets to the point where clients just don't want to apply and are like, we're just going to leave it, which is not right, said Del Cid, who does outreach assistance for Epiphany Community Health Outreach Services in Houston, known as ECHOS, Echoes, a church-based group that helps immigrants and refugees in the area access services. It's not good for them to give up just because it's confusing and stressful, she added. But a majority of clients that she's seen kicked off, Del Cid said, should be eligible. One of Del Cid's clients, Erica, who asked for her last name to be withheld for privacy reasons, said she had spent the past 2 months trying to get her 15 and 5-year-old Yoram and Yaretzi back on Medicaid. To find out if you're still enrolled in Medicaid, you can log into yourtexasbenefits.com. To find out if you're still eligible, you can call the state services number at 211 or reach out to your local community health center. You can also use any of these resources to apply for Medicaid. What if they get sick? Erica said. How am I going to be able to pay for medicine or doctor visits or anything like that? Erica said she sent in her papers on May the 16th, 1 day after the state's deadline, and she is now being asked to restart the application process. It's really unfair to the clients because they don't understand that all of a sudden they have to reapply, said Kathy Moore, executive director of Echoes. It's no longer a renewal when all they've ever done is renewed. And so for people who are not reading newspapers, it is a very difficult process to navigate, to understand, to even know what's happening. For people who aren't eligible anymore, advocates worry they may not be able to access other options because the state isn't giving them alternatives. There is a policy for 90 days of retroactive coverage, but it requires applicants to jump through a lot of hoops and is cumbersome to access, said Adrian Lloyd, health policy manager at Children's Defense Fund, Texas. Either way, the state is causing more problems for itself, Lloyd said. If you're kicking off a lot of eligible kids, hopefully, eventually, they have to get back on, and that's just a lot more administrative work and ultimately adds some more dollars for the state to spend, Lloyd said. One of the things we've been really harping on is that Texas is going really fast, unnecessarily fast, in this plan. Texas is one of 11 states that has not expanded Medicaid and has relatively low enrollment because of that. The state has the highest rate of uninsured residents in the country. Trying to access care, people who lose coverage risk paying the price with their health. Diabetes patients need to be able to pay for insulin. Kids need constant care. And for those with severe diagnosis, like cancer, a stoppage in treatment can be fatal. For example, at MD Anderson Cancer Centers, about 2% of patients rely on Medicaid, and because treatment can't stop, the hospitals have to work to help these patients get continuous treatment. Christina Rodriguez, 32, lives in San Antonio and has two children who have relied on Medicaid their whole lives. She has felt many ups and downs in the past months since protections were lifted. She said she found out she lost coverage after trying to take her 10-year-old daughter to the dentist to start the process of getting braces. They told her she wasn't covered. She said she called 211, the phone number for assistance with the state's local social services, and was told she had been sent multiple letters, none of which she had received. I've started a whole new application and on the whole process all over, maybe four times at this point, Rodriguez said. It's just been an anxiety-ridden process because I have insurance for myself through work, but my kids don't, and the fact that they are not covered and I wasn't even made aware of it until they had an appointment is insanity. Janet Eubank, executive director for the Texas Association of Community Health Centers, said many people probably still don't know their coverage has vanished and haven't received the news, potentially because of outdated contact information. Eubank said Texas's federally qualified community health centers, which are required to provide care for all patients, including those without insurance, were initially bracing for a deluge of patients once the unwinding began, but didn't see the increase they expected. It shows that many Texans don't even know what is coming, she said. The amount of patients who arrive without insurance will also financially hurt the community health clinics that serve them, she said. They're going to come in thinking they're insured, and we think this is going to happen really significantly in August, because a lot of people are going to want to bring their children in for well child visits and immunizations as they're getting ready to go back to school. And they're going to find out at that point, when they present for care, you're not insured anymore, Eubank said. There hasn't been a systematic and comprehensive outreach campaign being directed by the state, and so I think a lot of this is people just don't know, she added. For parents in similar situations, taking their kids to the emergency room and finding out they're not covered, it can mean a hefty bill that can throw off a lot of families, Lloyd said. In a statement, HHSC spokesman Tiffany Young said the agency used a multiple-pronged strategy to reach people, including mailing notices, sending text messages, hosting events, and collaborating with community partners. The state is also urging everyone who currently receives Medicaid or CHIP, known as CHIP benefits, to ensure their information is up to date at your texasbenefits.com. In 2021, 32% of community health center patients used Medicaid coverage, Eubank said. A majority were children, while some were disabled adults and pregnant Texans needing prenatal care. Normally, these patients don't come in as much for preventative or routine health checkups because it's a balance between coming to the doctor and putting food on the table, Eubanks said. But during the period of continuous coverage, she said there was an uptick in those services being provided at clinics. Without Medicaid, they're going to have to start making those really tough decisions about their child's care or their own care, she said. For Rodriguez, who works in business administration but is trying to find a different job and balance taking care of her kids, she said the entire system has just felt wonky. It made me feel more unstable than I already feel, she said. The Economist, Canary in the Coal Mine by M. Ray Perryman. Canaries were historically used in coal mines to provide an early warning of dangerous gases. The CNBC rankings, where Texas continues to fall, should be viewed in a similar light. 2 years ago, I referred to Texas falling to fourth as eerily disturbing, a remark that received considerably more attention than I anticipated. Last year, the state dropped to fifth, and in the newest rankings fell out of the top five, trailing North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Georgia, and Minnesota. CNBC evaluated 86 criteria within 10 categories, assigning weights based on factors identified as, quote, most important to business each year, end quote. The heaviest weighted category is workforce, where Texas ranks second, followed by infrastructure, economy and life, health and inclusion. Other categories include cost of doing business, technology and innovation, business friendliness, education, access to capital, and cost of living. Texas performs well in workforce, second, and economy, second, also comparing relatively favorably in technology and innovation, 8, and cost of doing business, 16. Lower rankings were infrastructure, 24, particularly given recent issues with the power grid. Business friendliness, 25, and education, 35, a sizable drop, which doesn't bode well for future workforce rankings. Regrettably, the state is dead last in life, health, and inclusion. The specific reasons mentioned for this abysmal ranking were the high percentage of people without health insurance, by far the most in the country, and the low numbers of primary care physicians and licensed child care facilities per capita. Various actions that are hacking away at inclusiveness, such as laws related to the LGBTQ plus population, voting rights, and reproductive rights, were also significantly highlighted. Texas is presently attracting hundreds of thousands of workers every year, and Chief Executive Magazine has ranked it as the, quote, best state for business, unquote, for 19 consecutive years. Texas also has had the most major corporate locations and expansions for the past 11 years. All of that to say that these concerns are unlikely to diminish economic performance in the immediate future, but they serve as critical harbingers of things to come if key issues are not addressed. Texas must assure that there are adequate water supplies and transportation capacity, and that when the switch is flipped, the lights come on. Proactive efforts in improving access to health care are similarly imperative. Inclusivity is becoming increasingly essential to competing for high-growth companies and in-demand workers. I've measured the potential effects of numerous discriminatory social policies, including impairing voting rights and gender identity, and their potential negative effects are substantial and very real. The consistent drop in the CNBC ratings is not likely to derail short-term economic success, but it is a canary in the coal mine that we had best heed. Stay safe.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, August 10th. Young nephew always inserted into adult gatherings. Dear Abby, my brother is 53. He has one child, my 12-year-old nephew, Connor. Our father was difficult, and neither of us has many happy memories of times we shared with him. Perhaps in response to this, my brother seems incapable of socializing without a son. Many times he suggests outings to my husband or his friends, and then throws in that he's planning on bringing Connor. We do not want the boy included in what should be adult outings, but we can't find a way of saying it. If I'm planning a dinner out or something else where I think he might invite his son, I preface it with a grown-ups-only clause. I can't discuss it with my sister-in-law because, even though I know she would understand, she wouldn't be tactful in mentioning it to my brother. My husband is not the type to say anything. It would mean more coming from him, but he doesn't want to cause upset. By the way, my brother is very outgoing and socially adept, so it's not like he needs this 12-year-old crutch. Any suggestions would be most appreciated. Signed, Frustrated in Nevada. Dear Frustrated, your brother may not need a social crutch, but from what you have described, the same may not be true of your nephew. Most 12-year-old boys have friends they can socialize with other than dad. Is that true of Connor, or would he be sitting alone in his room if his father didn't insert him into so many adult gatherings? Rather than tell your brother or his wife that the boy is unwelcome, it might be more helpful to ask whether Connor has difficulty socializing with his peers. If that's the case, he may need professional help. Dear Abby, I have a sister-in-law who constantly one-ups me. Anything I mention, she has to chime in and let everybody present know how much better her trip was, or that she got a better shopping deal, etc. It has now turned to my grandchildren. For example, at a family dinner, if I correct their table manners, she comes back with a smart comment like, "You can leave your elbows on the table," or, "It's okay to eat that with your fingers." She's trying to be the fun aunt. Recently, I barked right back, asking her not to undermine my comments about my grandkids' behavior. She did not reply. I do not want to harm our otherwise decent relationship. She has no grandkids of her own yet, and occasionally babysits my grandkids. Is there something better I can do? Signed, Had It Up to Here in Iowa. Dear Had It, talk to your sister-in-law and lay down some ground rules. Tell her that as much as you care about her, there are certain parameters it is important that she understand in her interactions with the grandkids. Explain what they are. If fun auntie cannot respect the boundaries, she should see them less often. Not enough young people these days are fortunate enough to have parents and grandparents who teach them appropriate manners. Kudos to you.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.